The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to criminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
Well, one major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents.
We love the
Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, my friends and visitors. Welcome to Normal Show Live. Thanks for being here for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. We are a production of the Normal Foundation. Check us out at normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. And we're coming to you live every weekday at 1 p.m. Pacific, right here from Rolla J Studios in beautiful Portland, Oregon, home of the 2010 Normal National Conference. More information on that coming right up. And joining me here in the studio to my left, steering the ship of the show, the blunt man to my chronic, Ganja John.
Yar, thar be pirates here.
What's up, bro?
Oh, we're having a good time. You were up in Seattle. You had a good weekend,
yeah,
I hear.
Yeah, I visited some friends up in Seattle. Let me fix my mic here.
No, you're good.
Okay. I went up to Seattle, and I'd actually like to thank a place up there, a little head shop called Peace of Mind, for hooking me up with this jar. Because I work for Normal, I use my Jedi powers. Yes.
Jedi powers, that's right.
But I did get a cool jar. I'll show it. My cam's here now. We change the cams around in the studio.
Yeah, so great stuff from Seattle. We'll get more information on that later on the show. Also joining us from our virtual studio in cool Astoria, Oregon, my good friend and half-sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Yes. Hello, guys. Nice to see you back from the weekend.
It's been a weird month, hasn't it? I mean, I've been sitting here all of August, and I don't think there's been one day it's been even close to mid-80s. How about out there on the coast?
Yeah, it's been pretty cold. I'm actually glad all the people that I've been begging to move out here, I'm glad they didn't do it this summer because they would probably be disappointed.
Oh my goodness.
Not always like this, and it's nice now.
Yeah. And so we got some of our listeners out there in the chat room that are complaining about their 97 degrees and 85% humidity. And
it rained the whole weekend in Seattle.
We feel awful for you. also, want to remind folks, coming up later tonight, I will be on the air with good old John Doe from John Doe Radio on their show tonight at 101.5 FM in the Denver area. I believe that's correct. I'm sure JDR will give me more information.
101.5 The Truth.
The Truth. That's right. TruthDenver.com. Thanks, John Doe. So great stuff coming up later tonight. Check that out on TruthDenver.com. You can listen in online if you're in the Denver area. Just check out 101.5 FM. On our show today, we got some great guests. John Kelly is going to be on. He is a drug testing expert, an expert witness in court, an author of the book False Positives Equal False Justice. We're going to talk about marijuana drug testing and how many different ways it can screw you over. I've also got a radical rant at the end of the show. More crazy stuff from the Stoners Against Legalization in a segment I'm going to call Toss Salad. Carrie brings us our hemp headlines right after the first break. We'll get to those right after this break. Information on the Normal Conference. And stay tuned. You're listening to Normal Show Live.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, or NORML, invites you to our 39th Annual National Conference,
legalization. Just say now. Thursday, September 9th through Saturday, September 11th, 2010, at the Opulent Governor's Hotel in downtown Portland.
The war on drugs has been a sport of failure, and I think that we need to rethink and reformulate our law.
Extend your visit through Sunday, September 12th, and you can also attend the free two-day Portland Hempstock, the largest outdoor cannabis and music festival in Oregon.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Just say now. The Normal National Conference, September 9th through 11th in Portland, Oregon. Details available on the web at normal.org/conference or by calling 202-483-5500.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
We reported last Friday about Montana's plan to require state-issued proof of residency to qualify for their medical marijuana program. First came the news last week from Health and Human Service Department spokesman Chuck Council, who said that the department was going to need a state-issued driver's license or identification card to qualify. The announcement came after a ruling due to several applications from people who have permanent residencies outside of the state. Although the exact number of out-of-state applications wasn't made available, the Health and Human Service Department said there were enough that it was a concern. Now, the applications in question had permanent residences outside of Montana, such as snowbirds, those that only live in Montana in the summer, and college students. The new requirements were all set to begin today, but a second announcement from Chuck Council of the Department of Health and Human Services came during Friday afternoon. During a legal review process that is standard for policy changes, the department found what it called a loophole in the law. After legal review, it has been ruled that the law is mute on the subject of legal residency, and there is no recourse for the Department of Health and Human Services to change the existing policy. The department will not change the way they process applications as they come into the department. So in trying to restrict access of out-of-staters, Montana now has to open the door to them. Montana will now join Oregon in allowing out-of-state citizens with a qualifying condition to apply for the medical marijuana program in their state. Now, this is a different issue than reciprocity, a recognizing of one state's medical marijuana program in another. But with these brand new revelations about laws that are years old, it seems like the other 12 medical marijuana states might take a look at the language of their own bills to see if indeed they are open to out-of-state residents.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's good news. We've got Oregon and we've got Montana now, where you do not have to be a state resident to get that state's medical marijuana protection, which really makes sense when you think about it. I mean, say you're a cancer patient, right? Just because you happen to have an address that's, you know, over a certain imaginary line doesn't make you any less of a cancer patient. I mean, you still do, you don't deserve to be arrested just because your address isn't in the right location. So yes, the other 12 states that don't allow for or haven't yet looked at allowing for out-of-staters to get their recommendation should do so. I believe California will let out-of-staters and Washington will as well, but I think it's cloudy. I'll have to look that up and get more information on it. But the other great news when you look at this, Carrie mentioned reciprocity, which is when a state will recognize other states' medical marijuana cards. Montana has reciprocity as well, so it makes it the only state of the 14 medical marijuana states where you can get their medical marijuana card, or you can bring your own medical marijuana card and be recognized in that state. That's great news.
A judge in Hawaii has declared that the court will not recognize a medical marijuana card for a man who has been ordered on probation. Kaleo Robertson, a well-known professional surfer in Hawaii, was ordered 500 hours of community service, 5 years of probation, and a $2,000 fine as part of a sentence for first-degree promotion of a detrimental drug and possession of drug paraphernalia. Robertson, who's 35, was served with a search warrant of his house after marijuana plants were spotted by a marijuana eradication mission by helicopter back in May of 2009. During the warrant search, officers reported finding a pound of cannabis in a kitchen cabinet, just over $1,000 in cash, and an additional 12.7 grams of marijuana in another closet. Robertson admitted that 35 of the 100 plants that were found that day belonged to him. Two others were charged with similar crimes during the warrant search, who lived in adjoining units. Second Circuit Judge Shackley Raffetto followed a plea agreement in the sentencing. And then Robertson, who had pleaded no contest to the charges as part of the sentence, he ordered him to not consume alcohol or illegal drugs. He will be subject to a regular drug screen throughout his probation. In the ruling, Judge Raffaello said, "I am not going to recognize your medical marijuana card, so if you test positive for that, you will be in violation." Robertson did add that the judge did add that the only way Robertson's medical marijuana card would be valid is if he obtains a new statement under oath from a physician stating a specific diagnosis that requires treatment with marijuana and also testifying that there is no alternative to marijuana to treat that condition. In a final jab to surfer Kaleo Robertson, the judge told him he needed to change his life and that if he violates the probation just once, he will be sent to prison, that he could count on it. Now, it's unclear if Robertson obtained his medical marijuana card before or after the arrest back in May of 2009.
Okay, so this guy was a patient, but did I get you right there, Carrie, on the details that he was caught with more than what Hawaii allows?
Well, I actually made a call and I looked into it, and I am not sure if he was a patient at the time. This happened over a year ago, the actual arrest, so okay. I'm guessing maybe he wasn't a patient because that wasn't mentioned in any of the court orders.
Okay. Well, still,
he's currently a patient.
Yeah, he's currently a patient. That's kind of reprehensible to me that the judge would look at that and not allow him, you know, to keep his patient status. I mean, when we have people that are accused of crimes, first of all, they're innocent until proven guilty. And second of all, with murderers or rapists or thieves or anybody who's committing violent crimes, we don't restrict them from getting, you know, pharmaceutical medications. We don't restrict them from their prescriptions for OxyContin or Vicodin or Percocet or Demerol or any of that kind of stuff. But yet, when it comes to marijuana, judges feel this need to restrict the probationer, the parolee, whoever it might be, to restrict them from using marijuana. And it's completely a moral judgment here, especially when we're talking about a guy who's a medical marijuana patient. To say that, oh, I don't trust that you're really a patient unless you go back under oath and get another guy to verify that you're a medical patient, that's bad enough. But the really absurd and obscene thing about this is when the judge says he has to prove that there's no other alternative to marijuana. Since when did judges have medical licenses to make those kind of determinations? So what if there's an alternative to medical marijuana? You realize most of those alternatives stop up your guts, give you all sorts of constipation, can lead to all sorts of other deficiencies and problems. And you want to have to force someone to take those instead of taking safe, non-toxic, effective, herbal medical marijuana? It's ridiculous. Keep your judge's robes on and leave the doctor's coats to the doctors.
Medical marijuana has traveled a long road in Washington, D.C., and the program is finally going to begin on January 1st of next year, according to a rules and regulations draft delivered to the city on Friday by Mayor Adrian Fenty. Now, under the planned regulation, the city health department would be responsible for registering applicants, but in a twist that is a first in medical marijuana programs in the U.S., the licensing and oversight of the facilities that will grow and distribute medical cannabis would be handled by the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board and its enforcement arm, the Alcohol Beverage Regulation Administration. Some activists in the D.C. area are voicing concerns that the message they had been trying to achieve, to recognize cannabis as a medical treatment, not just as a drug for recreational use, is being undermined by the new proposed regulations. Wayne Turner, who co-wrote the 1998 initiative, told the Washington Post he was completely blindsided by the addition of roles for the alcohol regulators, saying that the Liquor Board is completely inappropriate to run this program. One of the D.C. council members, Dave Catania, said his preference would have been for the health department, which regulates pharmacies, to oversee the program. Ultimately, it was the decision of the Attorney General, Peter Nichols, who said that the liquor regulators are most ready for the challenge of overseeing the new program, and said that the alcohol regulators of the city do a terrific job of enforcement and inspection. After talking with them, he felt that they would do a great job. Charles Brodsky, chairman of the Alcohol Board, agrees with him. He sees that it is a better fit because regulating marijuana is so different from regulating prescription drugs. On Friday, he said that he and other board members have spent hundreds of hours researching regulations from across the country. No doubt they found in their research that the program will be a major revenue generator for the city budget. 5 dispensaries will pay $10,000 a year, and up to 10 cultivation centers that would be allowed to grow 95 plants each will pay an additional $5,000 each. Yearly registration of a medical marijuana user or a caregiver will cost $100. There will be a subsidy for those living under the poverty level, and that will be paid by a 2% revenue tax. Users will only be allowed to use medical marijuana in their home or a medical facility where they reside, if that is allowed. The new rules also gave the chief of police the power to call for a 96-hour shutdown command if any dispensary is deemed a threat to public health or safety, much like the authority for the alcohol board to shut down a nightclub. None of the new regulations written in stone just yet. With their announcement on Friday, begins a 45-day review period.
Okay, so we are constantly lobbying ourselves and other organizations are lobbying for medical marijuana. And we constantly say, you know, this is about medicine. This is about helping sick and disabled people with severe consequences here for their health, helping them to get marijuana, to use it as a medicine to avoid prosecution. And our opponents, they will come back and say, no, it's an excuse for you to get high. You just want to get high. You just want to legalize, you know, blah, blah, blah. And we say, no, it's about medical. It's about medicine. We should be treated like a medicine. So we pass medical marijuana in Washington, D.C., and we lobby them to, hey, it's medicine, so put it under the health department, right? Put it, have people that are involved with healthcare dealing with healthcare. That kind of makes sense. So what do? They turn control over it to the Alcohol Control Commission. Who is it here that's got the problem with understanding that it's medicine? I mean, this just goes to show once again this bias that we have in government and in the mainstream society that continues to think that marijuana isn't a serious medicine. They jump right to treating it like alcohol. Now, we're all for that. You know, treat it like alcohol if you want to get it to the general population. You want to get it to all adults over the age of 21. You want to deal with it like a recreational relaxant that it is. Fine. Yeah. Then we can talk about having it run like alcohol. But if you're going to approve a program that is medicine at the federal level here, the District of Columbia, if you're going to approve this as medicine, then by God, treat it like medicine. Give it to the health department. There is so much that is wrong with this whole Washington, D.C. medical marijuana system they're coming up with here. First of all, they talk about the dispensaries, you know, be opening up by January 1st. But in the original bill that was voted for by 69% of the district residents were allowed to grow their own. They could grow their own medicine. That was taken out in all the amendment processes as it made its way through the congressional sausage factory out there. It's just sick and disgusting that the will of the people would be so denied in this situation. I mean, it was hard enough to get them to just count the damn votes. Really? We have to force them to count votes in America? That's just amazing. But yeah, this is what happened. Back in 1998, after California passed Prop 215, there was Washington, Oregon, Alaska, and the District of Columbia voting on medical marijuana initiatives. Oregon, Washington, and Alaska's were more restrictive than California's. California, of course, has that famous phrase that the doctors can recommend marijuana for any condition they deem necessary. And also, California's famous for not having a state registry. It's all kind of a local issue. So the other states, Washington, Oregon, Alaska, looked at that and said, no, we need to have a better system than just that. We'll have a list of specific conditions. We will have a state registry in the case of Oregon. I think Alaska's got a state registry as well. All of these to make it a little bit better controlled and treated a little bit more like medicine. But at that same time, 1998, Washington, D.C.'s ballot, their initiative was more liberal than California's. Gave more latitude to people to grow their own, allowed the same, you know, wording of any condition a doctor feels necessary. And that passed by 69%, the highest vote total ever recorded for an initiative at the state level, or at the case of the district level, in all of the 14 medical marijuana states. It's clear that the people want more open access to medical marijuana, not less. And yet, the Congress stymied them. The bar amendments prevented the District of Columbia from spending the money to count the damn votes. In our nation's capital, our politicians refused to count the votes of an election. Now, we got that overturned. We went to court and took took care of that and got those votes counted and found out that it was 69%. But then for the next 12 years, they impeded the implementation of the program by not funding it. They could not spend any money to implement the program. Finally, now in 2010, after 12 years, 69% of the people, they're finally getting around to implement the program, but it is nothing like what the people voted for 12 years ago. I guess half a loaf's better than none, but DC, you can do better than this.
I think it's time to break in that new bubbler.
I know, we got the new bubbler from Seattle. It's very nice. It's not a starfish, but it's awfully nice. So we'll take a break and be back in a minute with some Roots Monday jazz.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would say to South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Normal Show Live will bring you exclusive live coverage of Seattle Hemp Fest on the third weekend of August. You'll probably remember more of it than those of us attending.
Today I was walking down the street. To my surprise, yeah.
If you like what you hear and would like to donate to the cause, send your check or money order to Normal Show Live, 1600 K Street Northwest, Suite 501, Washington, D.C., 20006. Your donation is a tax-deductible gift to the Normal Foundation and will be used to help support this online media. Thank you.
Yarr! Thar be pirates here! You know why we pirates love the Normal Show? Har, har. Because it's always smoking, matey. Har, 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 har.
This is Normal Show Live.
To be the pirate king.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Roots Monday, our celebration of the music that evolved into the popular modern music of today. We pick the best of blues, country, folk, and jazz with a 420 feel and serve it up for you every Monday. Brought to you by Cannabis Carry in Astoria, Oregon, and CannabisFantastic.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Hey everybody, 23 after the hour. I was so excited when I saw this song come up in the uploads music folder. We got some Charlie Parker, who was also known as The Bird. And as I'm sure you're quite aware, Carrie, The Bird is the word.
The bird is the word, especially today. Russ, really, it doesn't get more roots than this with today's Toker Tune, a piece of musical history. Legendary jazz musicians Charlie Bird Parker and Dizzy Gillespie team up in one of the most influential jazz standards ever written. Dizzy wrote the song Groovin' High in 1945, and this performance features Charlie Parker playing with Gillespie's band Rebop 6. It also features well-known bassist Ray Brown and probably the most famous vibraphonist Milt Jackson. Oh. The song is one of the best examples of bebop, with the classic bebop combo of saxophone, trumpet, bass drums, and piano. Groovin' High was one of Dizzy's best-known hits, and between them, they have Parker and Gillespie, they have 16 different albums or compilations named Groovin' High after this iconic jazz standard. Now, there are hundreds and hundreds of recordings of this song by other artists over the last 65 years, but we're going back to the source today with a version that was recorded in 1946. Now, another note, today's Toker Tune was recorded when both Parker and Dizzy were less than 30 years old. So I'm so happy that they released this song for us to offer to you today. Some jazz historians actually point to this very song, Russ, as a history marker when jazz went from just interpreting standards with stylized melodies on horn instruments to the improvisational techniques that jazz has been known for ever since. So please close your eyes and listen to this, Groovin' High, with the masters and grandfathers of the genre. We got Bird on his saxophone, Dizzy on his trumpet. Let's take it away, Russ.
All right. Get out that hippie lettuce. Smoke up a jazz cigarette. It's time for some Bird Parker. This is Groovin' High.
Thank you.
Charlie.
Want a copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
All right, folks, done. All right, folks, time to take a look at Normal's Cannabis Community Calendar, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. Today, Monday, August 9th, the Southwest Michigan Compassion Club is meeting at the American Legion Hall in Buchanan, Michigan. Madison Normal's bi-monthly meeting is taking place at the Wilmar Center in Madison, Wisconsin. On Tuesday, August 10th, there's a weekly medicating event at the Phoenix Cafe in Hazel Park, Michigan. Hemp TV is on the air in Albuquerque, New Mexico. You can call 505-880-0666 for tickets to the show. Wednesday, August 11th, Cincinnati's Fountain Square Reggae Night is taking place. Visit with Miami Valley Normal, info@mvnormal.org. The Grand Traverse Compassion Connection meeting is taking place as well on Wednesday in Traverse City, Michigan, gtcompassionconnection.org. For more information on all of these events, check out Normal's Cannabis Community Calendar at normal.org/calendar.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Almost busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there. And we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that interact nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement in prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now, we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our Normal Show Live Cannabis Conversations.
Welcome back, everyone. 33 after the hour. Special update note for the show. At 1:45, we'll be joined by John Doe from John Doe Radio with a breaking news update for Colorado. But in the meantime, we are joined by our special guest, drug testing expert, author John Kelly, author of the book False Positives Equal False Justice. Thanks for joining us, John.
You're welcome. Glad to be on.
I was alerted to your work through some of what you had written on the internet on various blogs about marijuana drug testing and drug testing in general, and all of the ways that false positives can show up to really harm a person's chances in court. Can you give us a little bit of a thumbnail sketch of what you mean by false positives equal false justice?
Let me confine my remarks to the most commonly used test, which is the Duquesne-Levine color chemical test. That's used by the DEA and police officers around the country. And what it is simply is it's a vial of chemicals in which you place a small particle of the suspected material. And basically, if it turns purple, it could be marijuana.
That's where the police are going to, they make this judgment that it's purple and therefore I'm going to arrest you for cannabis.
Yes, now it's gotten much worse. The Supreme Court has ruled that tests like the Duquesne-Levine do not prove the presence of marijuana. Therefore, you can't even be prosecuted, let alone convicted. In other words, if the only proof you have that the person has marijuana is the results of the duloxetine test, the case is supposed to be dismissed. But now the DEA recently came out and in sworn affidavit said that the duconoislavine test is incapable of producing false positives. Secondly, that no DEA analyst has ever misidentified marijuana, and that it has a zero error rate. All three statements are false. They're scientifically impossible. They're perjurious because they were given in sworn affidavits around the country in many cases and resulted in convictions and prison sentences.
Yeah. Color me shocked that the DEA would utter false statements in contrary to science, but wow, amazing. The story that I had read talked about a middle-aged woman who had gone out in the wilderness and, you know, was using a sage stick, you know, sage and lavender to make smoke, aromatic smoke for spiritual purposes, and that these officers charged her with marijuana based on this test coming up for that. Could you tell listeners a little more about that?
Yeah, sure. That is very typical. Again, they just, you know, the duconoislavine test will react positively sometimes to sage. In other words, sage and other herbs will turn it purple. And they're supposed to, at that point, submit the substance to what's called GCMS analysis, which is the only valid test for marijuana. They don't do that anymore. They didn't do it in this case. They told the woman that they did, and she was about to go to prison, quite frankly. Luckily, she called me, and I informed her attorney that this test was invalid and that he should demand a GCMS analysis. And he did, and the GCMS analysis was negative, and she was released. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, she was on her way to prison, literally, because police officers can now testify at court as experts on the basis of just this duconoislavine test, and that's it. You can go to prison or, you know, be convicted.
So this test, this DL test, the reason they're using it so much out in the field, of course, is it's easy and it's cheap. But before they go to court, they're supposed to use the gas chromatography test, the GCMS test, which is naturally more expensive and takes time at the crime lab. How many times, then, do you have any estimate of how many times cannabis consumers have maybe even done a plea deal before that GCMS test was ever given to prove that it was marijuana?
It's easily hundreds of thousands. In fact, the woman that we just discussed, that's what her attorney was advising, okay, that she negotiate a plea agreement. And what people forget is a plea agreement is still a conviction, okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, what happens, typically what happens, the prosecutor or the police say, oh, the test proves it's marijuana. You better negotiate a deal. The test does not prove anything. That's just a lie. And but, you know, most people are taken in. They just want to get out of there, whatever, you know.
Well, what can our listeners do if they've been caught, you know, and the police have used this DL test? What should they do next to, you know, protect their rights?
What they should do, of course, is get an attorney. But the problem is defense attorneys around the country, including, I must say, normal attorneys, do not challenge the test. That has got to stop.
Yeah.
And people, you know, they can get my report and the book that I'm coming out with. it'll show them how to do that and how to everything the attorney has to do. It's very simple, actually. This isn't rocket science. And I'm starting a campaign to get people, anybody who's arrested for marijuana should demand a GCMS analysis. Mm-hmm. That's their right. They have to do that.
And we're talking about these are tests that are testing the actual marijuana, not the person's urine or blood, the actual marijuana substance.
Right.
So
this is just substance.
This is requiring the police and the prosecutors then to actually prove what they're busting you for is actually marijuana and not sage or, you know, fake bud or whatever. So everybody has that right. Even if you're caught dead to rights and you have marijuana,
make them
prove it in court.
That's right. You have the right to demand a GCMS analysis. And the thing is, if this catches on, the whole system is, in my opinion, corrupt. So anything to stop it is ethical.
Right.
And if even thousands of people, there's more than 800,000 people a year arrested for marijuana. Even if thousands of them, demand GCMS analysis, the courts will be clogged and they'll have to, reconsider the whole policy.
Exactly. And it's something we're going to get this information out to our network of over 350 normal legal committee members and make sure they understand this. It's also something we'd love to have presentations on at our Aspen Legal Seminar and Key West Legal Seminars, because you're right. The defense attorneys need to be fighting this and forcing the government to prove these charges. And like you said, if only 1 out of 100 people who get busted for marijuana demand the GCMS test, it'll be so not worth their while to go after pot smokers that maybe they'll start to look the other way.
Yeah.
To blow my own horn,
Russ, is I'm one of only a handful, if that many, defense experts on this test, and I'm available for hire around the country anywhere.
Okay. I have a question from our live chat room. They're asking, when you demand that GCMS test, doesn't the GCMS test have to have a gram or more to make a determination, or is there a limit that it can determine to?
No, it doesn't have to have that much. No, no, not at all. A very tiny amount. It only has to be a tiny amount. And if for some reason they can't do it, then they're supposed to dismiss charges.
Exactly. Right.
Because they don't have any proof that it's marijuana.
Is it possible?
They can't have it both ways.
Yeah. Is it possible that maybe the residue in a bag of marijuana, even just sticking to the plastic, would that be enough for that test?
Yeah, okay. Sure. They can put the whole plastic in.
Okay. Well, John Kelly, thank you so much. The book is False Positives Equal False Justice. You can look it up on Amazon.com and other book retailers to get the book. And anything else,
Russ,
you'd like to tell our listeners?
Yeah, Russ, that's a report.
Oh,
that's
I'm sorry.
Report.
I'm
that's
sorry.
Okay, but I have written how to obtain a pretrial dismissal of marijuana charges or an acquittal. And I'm looking for a publisher.
All right. Well, we'll help you out as best we can. I want this information to get out to everyone. John Kelly, thank you so much for joining us on Normal Show Live today.
Thank you.
All right. Coming up next, we've got special breaking news from the Rocky Mountain state of Colorado. John Doe from John Doe Radio joins us to tell us the latest and how you Coloradans need to get involved to protect your rights. We're right back just after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.
Normal Show Live reminds you to never consent to a search. If you're holding and you consent, in most states you will be arrested immediately and you will go to jail. If you don't consent to a search, police may try to intimidate you by threatening to bring in drug-sniffing dogs or try to fool you by saying things will go easier if you consent. Yeah, easier for them, sure. Stand your ground, refuse the search, and ask the officer if you're free to go. If they still detain you and eventually find your contraband, you'll be no more busted than if you had allowed the search. But by refusing the search, your attorney has a chance to win your acquittal before a judge. If you consent to the search, your attorney's hands are tied. You can find a list of Normal Legal Committee attorneys specializing in marijuana cases by visiting the Find a Lawyer link at normal.org. Going to break in with breaking news here on Normal Show Live. We're joined from Denver, Colorado by John Doe from John Doe Radio. And John, welcome to the show live.
How you doing, Russ?
I'm doing very good, and I'm looking forward to doing your show later tonight. Before we get into the breaking news, remind folks how they can hear us talking later tonight.
Yeah, that's right, Russ. You'll be on 101.5 Denver's FM Talk, The Truth with Green Rice Radio and John Doe Radio. That's going to be tonight, 10 o'clock Mountain Time, and any Normal Show Live listener can go check us out and listen in to the stream at truthdenver.com. So it's that easy, just truthdenver.com, and then there's a live stream. Just click on that, and you're good to go.
All right, so for my homies here in Oregon, 9 Pacific, right?
Yeah, okay. We're one hour ahead of you guys.
All right. So yep. You've got news for us. You were in our chat room and you had some breaking news. You were telling us about that people need to get on the phone now. And I figured rather than me trying to explain it, I'd just bring you on and have you discuss it with us. So thanks so much for doing this on short notice. Tell folks what they need to know.
Well, it's a short notice for everybody, not just you guys. This afternoon, I expected to have an easy afternoon. We're going to relax up until showtime. Got all the production done last night. And in my email box, I see that there's just this crazy talk about Denver passing more strict regulations when it comes to medical marijuana patients. Denver will read tonight first reading of Council Bill 0607, the bill restricting growing of medical marijuana by zoning districts in the city, a residential district specifically. It would essentially eliminate the ability of a person to be a caregiver and provide cannabis for another person not living in the same house with them. Some excerpts from the bill are, the growing of medical marijuana shall comply with the following. No more than 6 plants may be grown for each patient, register identification card holders, residing in the unit cannot exceed 12 plants per dwelling unit. So really, let me make sense of that since I just kind of stumbled over myself there ridiculously. each patient in Colorado is allowed 6 plants, technically 3 flowering, 3 veggie.
Right.
Under this bill, it would only allow 2 people, you know, maybe like a husband and a wife, to grow their own, which is a total of 12 plants.
Right.
Growing and or storage of medical marijuana shall occur within a completely enclosed structure. Growing and storage of medical marijuana shall not occur in a common area associated with the dwelling unit. And the one that is really tough, too, for a lot of us that have had trouble in the past couple of weeks getting rid of our excess marijuana, which, I mean, but the state law has made it basically impossible for us growing, you know, 3 to 6 plants or however many you're growing to get rid of our excess. If you grow over 5 plants or go over 5 patients, excuse me, getting a little ahead of myself here. If you grow over 5, or you have over 5 patients, then you have to register as a dispensary in the state of Colorado now. So anybody under those 5 patient limits, you know, they're making it difficult for us. Because right here, growing shall be personal use only by the patient registry. Retail or wholesale of goods or products derived from the growing or medical marijuana and any off-site distribution is prohibited. Mm-hmm. So basically, that means that if you grow your marijuana, you can't do anything with it. It has to stay in your house.
Yeah, these are the, you know, more of the unintended consequences. Whenever they try to, you know, fly in the face of the laws of supply and demand, this is this kind of stuff that happens. Let me address one of the things. You said something about that medical marijuana shall only be grown in an enclosed structure. So is that, am I to take that to mean no outdoor growing at all?
Yeah, well, we really don't have a lot of outdoor growing here in Colorado as it is anyway.
Okay.
The law makes it pretty hard. And we had a test case when the laws first got passed here in Colorado, where someone was throwing out bags and their neighbors had saw it, and because of the neighbors seeing it infringed on the public, and that's strictly prohibited gotcha. Inside Amendment 20. So,
okay.
Yeah, and I do apologize for my holy jumbled Batman there. That was quite a jumbled explanation of everything. But people get the idea, and if you'd like to follow what I do and what I put out, you can go to Facebook, follow me under Tim Martin, or the John Doe Radio Show have a Facebook page. And on those Facebook pages are contact information for these council members.
Yeah.
There's three specific council members that are important targets for our goals. They've been friends of ours. They've been people that have been willing to work with us in the past. And they're pretty important people in the future to keep in our pocket. And that's Gene Robb, Councilman Chris Nevitt, and also Councilwoman Carla Madison. So all three of those are pretty positive people. They work close with SAFER, and they've been really positive with Mason and his group. And when I called them and when I talked to them, they said that we were really organized. There was a lot of people that called. So that's something we take pride of here in Colorado. We have an insanely awesome and effective grassroots organization. That's just basically, I say organization, but I really mean patients and people and citizens. So
yeah,
it's pretty cool. So I really encourage you guys to get involved with this, even if you're not in Colorado, call them.
Sure. Now, this proposed ordinance here for what's the scope of this? Is it just City of Denver?
Yeah, it's just for the City of Denver. But I can tell you right now, if Denver passes this, it would set a pretty heavy standard for the rest of the cities across the state to run with, and I'm sure they would run with it. Now that we have dispensaries in Colorado, I think that some of the, and even the councilwoman that proposed this said she hadn't talked to any patients before she proposed this. Now that we have dispensaries, everybody thinks, well, why do people need to grow? They don't need to grow in their basement. Well, people need to grow because they aren't necessarily able to afford the dispensary. They aren't necessarily able to get out and visit the dispensaries. And, you know, I mean, the stuff that I can maybe grow in my basement is going to be a whole heck of a lot better, and it's proven in many circumstances to be a heck of a lot better of quality than what you can get inside of a dispensary.
Yeah. So is this a case, then, of the legislators here deciding that, well, you've got dispensaries, so you don't need home grow? Is that the summary here?
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going with that whole thing. Yeah, I think that's really what's happening in a lot of places in Colorado is a lot of people didn't get their way when it came down to 1284, and that was complete elimination of dispensaries, even though 1284 is as harsh as it is, and it's turning out to be even worse every day that we go and more convoluted. I think they're really, the ones that didn't get that knockout of complete dispensaries are really going to try everything that they can to close every single loophole and get control of everything they can. Now, as I mentioned before, this is really frustrating because, well, these people have no clue what they're doing. They're absolutely just mindless and blind to the real world because what they're doing, I mean, we can grow in Colorado. I mean, we've proven that, and we can grow really good greens. That's got to go somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
People just do not keep all their marijuana.
That was something you and I were...
Some people do, but it's going to go to the black market.
Yeah, right. That was something you and I were discussing through an email at one point was the unintended consequence of this. This 1284 said the dispensaries now have to grow 70% of their product, which basically means that the people the people who had been growing medical marijuana and selling it to the dispensaries, only 30% of that market is available to them now. So obviously the other 70%, it's not like it just disappears. Tell folks about these unintended consequences and what's happening. What is the effect it's having on the average cannabis consumer and medical patient there in Colorado?
Well, I think we're already seeing this. And in fact, last week there was an article from the North Metro Denver Task Force that giving an opinion on 380% increase in black market sales when it comes down to marijuana. I don't know if that number is correct or not, but I do know that it's probably something like that. It's pretty heavy and probably even more. In Colorado, it's so strict. The 70-30 rule that you talk about, dispensaries can have to grow 70% of their marijuana, and they can only obtain 30% of their marijuana from another source. And those sources can only be five different sources.
Oh, my.
So when it comes down to it, felons can't be dispensary owners, period, or grow for over five patients. So me as a felon, with all my excess marijuana, I have really nowhere to go with it and nothing to do with it, you know, and people like myself who maybe haven't been through what I have been through are not as scared as I am to necessarily work with the black market. They're not going to have a problem pushing all that to the black market sales.
Yeah, and that's something
I want to talk about here, just to
jump in here for just a second about that. It's something we see in other states, too, with respect to medical marijuana laws, is they'll say they'll have these provisions against people with a felony. And generally, they're talking about drug felony, and generally, that means cultivation felony. They want to put these restrictions on them being dispensary owners or growers or supplying the dispensaries. It's like, duh, these are the people that know what the hell they're doing. It makes no sense.
Yeah, it makes absolutely no sense at all. And in fact, I myself have talked a few times with Chris Romer, Senator Chris Romer. He was a huge piece of getting legislation put into place here in Colorado. And I looked him eye to eye and said, hey, Mr. Romer, you know, Senator Romer, people like myself, people with felonies that have gotten caught up here in the past couple of years in the hoopla and the ups and downs of everything, you know, I really feel like there needs to be some sort of way that we need to figure this out, and there needs to be a way to allow us to stay in this industry and involved, because, I mean, we're an important part. And he looked at me in the eye and he said, I agree with you. We need to find a way for you guys to get this figured out. And then he goes around the next week and calls people like myself with, you know, I have even a problem saying drug offense, marijuana offense,
yeah,
because I don't even think it's that. But he calls people like myself knuckleheads. We need to keep the knuckleheads out of the industry. And it was one of the most offensive things. I've had a police chief shut a door on me when I was trying to talk with him about marijuana reform when it was legalization came up here in Colorado. And I've had a few other instances where they've been pretty, like, off-putting. But this, to me, was like, you know, first, I felt like he was talking to me directly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what we're dealing with here in Colorado. And I think that that's something that we're going to be dealing with here for the next couple of years, is these people trying to get a hold on this industry. You know, they see what's happening in California. And it makes them afraid for the out of control that could come in the future. So they're trying to get control of it now. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's going to be a rough ride. But like I said before, we have a really great grassroots program here in Colorado. The people get involved. They stay involved. And really, that's the reason why we've kept off legislation and all this BS as long as we have.
Yeah. Well, we've got more time to talk about it later tonight, 9 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Mountain, midnight Eastern on the John Doe Radio Show tonight.
It is going to be a fired up show tonight. I can tell you that right now. I am extremely fired up about this. And we'll see what happens. I know this goes to a first reading tonight. So if it does not pass first reading tonight, then it will not go to vote. So
okay. We'll
see that. Maybe if it passes, we'll have a fired up show tonight. I know we're going to be talking a lot about Prop 19. You're going to be bringing everything that you have to the table. You are one of the greatest sectors and voices of it, so I want to make sure that we get you on and get everybody out there.
Well, thank you, John Doe from John Doe Radio. Check out johndoeradio.com and truthdenver.com. We'll talk to you later on tonight, John. Thanks for being here. Thanks, everybody, for joining us for the show. I'll save my rant for tomorrow, or maybe we'll use some of it on the show tonight with John Doe. I want to thank him again for coming on to the show, and Cannabis Carrie and Ganja John for everything they are doing here at Normal Show Live. Check us out at stash.normal.org. Follow me, Radical Russ, on Twitter. Follow Ganja John on Twitter. And one last thing, boy, the term drug felon with respect to people who grow marijuana is a double oxymoron. Number one, it's not a drug. And number two, they're not felons. Felons are people that cause serious, grievous harm to other people or property. People that grow marijuana only bring good to people.
Just mellow us out, baby.
That's right. We love them. Thank you for growing. Thank you for showing. We'll be back next time. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it.
you take a scene, you plan it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a scene, you plan it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.